Welcome to episode one of the Black Art Podcast. I'm Lloyd.
I'm Jake.
And we are here to talk to you about all things magic related, magic, mystery, deception, the dark arts, if you will. And speaking of dark arts, that amazing intro music was kindly allowed for us to be played by the incredible YouTube channel called Modern Music of the Dark Ages. And it's a composer who takes classic pieces of magic, music even, and then plays them as if they were, as if you'd hear in the stylistic sound of how you'd hear them in the medieval era. And I just think it's fascinating. And finding that track, you know, it was Jake's suggestion for that piece of music. and yeah, we reached out and they really kindly allowed us to use it as our intro song. Is it called a song if it's not sung, Jake?
Intro medley music? Tune composition. I don't know.
Either way,
I watched too much Jonathan Creek as a child, so that's soared into my memory forever. That
I know. I always find it. I love that song so much because of Jonathan. That piece of music so much because of Jonathan Creek, and I've been very careful over the years to not use it, but it kind of feels like this is the perfect format to dust off the sound, and actually found a really great rendition of it by Modern Music of the Dark Age. So go and check them out on YouTube. But we were having a little discussion before this podcast started, and we said we're not going to spend the first 10 minutes of episode one talking about who we are and what we're about, because I think we'll lose people's interest quite quickly. So
no one cares.
No one cares. If you like the podcast and you're going to stick around over the next, you know, episodes, months and years to come, then you'll get to know about us in the meantime. But with all that being said, should we just try dive straight into what we're about and just get into the meat of it?
Yeah, I think getting into the meat of it is the best course of action. Definitely.
In your head, Jake, what sort of subjects and topics are we going to be covering? And what are we going to be generally talking about?
In my head, this is all about theory, craft, and the art itself, as opposed to wallet reviews and, you know, any kind of industry drama, really, because that's not what magic is to me at all.
Yes. So I co-host another podcast called The Magic Podcast, and that gives me my weekly fix of what's going on in the industry of magic, in the world of magic news in general. But what I don't get enough of is to talk about craft, the craft of magic itself, creativity. So this podcast really exists to have two people who I think we have similar and opposing views on how magic should be and be represented.
Yeah.
And it's just an opportunity for us to take some pre-arranged, pre-decided topics and explore them in as open a fashion as possible.
Yeah. I mean, on the subject of pre-arranged topics, there's nothing too structured or regimented. It is literally a Google Doc of about 40 things that I've written down that I've thought about over the past week or so.
Which is perfect. I mean, so for everyone listening, Jake is producing this podcast. And Jake's sort of the guy behind the source material, choosing what we're going to be covering for the most part. And the way when he says broad, I said, like, and Jake's on the same page, that we're going to be, it could just be that we've heard an amazing quote.
Yeah.
That inspires us in some way related to magic. So we'll explore that. It could be that we've uncovered an amazing age old method or principle, and we wanted to talk about how we'd use it. In you know, it could just be that we want to talk about a new script for a magic effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Broad. It's the stuff that you don't really hear people talk about on things like this.
Yeah. So
with that being said,
what's the first topic you have?
Well, it was something that we spoke about last night, actually. With I mean, we've only just mentioned that we're not going to really be talking about the industry too much, but I can't really bring this up without referencing it. Dan/Freak has just recently released Iceberg.
Yes.
Is that the name of the effect? Iceberg.
It is the name of the effect. And this is not plugin, but I have it next to me on my desk. Yeah. So it's right there. It's called
So for a long time, I've been super, super obsessed with the idea of an isolated object being involved in any kind of effect. So whether it's a switch or whether it stays the same throughout, I mean, there's things like, you know, is it Christian Grace has switch one?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. It captures the attention for some reason. I don't know what it is. It's the fact that something is tangible and it's there and it's like, look, I'm not going to mess with it, even if you are messing with it. But you have a keyring that is a switching device.
Mm.
So I took your prop for the keyring and just put a card inside it, and there's no switch.
Nice.
And I haven't really done too much with it yet, but I want to. We were speaking about the trick that cannot be explained.
Yes.
Which is, I know there's a host of variants of different people's take on the effect, but I did actually forget to research or write down who the original effect was by.
So I have this thing, I think a lot of people have this, where if I learn a piece of information incorrectly the first time I learn it, I can never, it's very rare that I can remember it the right way. So I always remembered it as Di Vernon, but I'm pretty sure it's the opposite. The opposite of Di Vernon being Marlowe.
Right.
So, but I memorized it wrong the first time. A funny side story from my childhood is that a friend of mine, like a close family friend, basically learned his mother. He was older than me. His mum taught him his left and rights. And she taught him by saying, you hold your left hand up and you make the L symbol with your index finger and thumb. That's left. This side's left. So then he was explaining to me how he learned his left and right. And we were talking face to face. So he held up his left hand and made this sign. And then he said, you do the same thing. So I held up my directly opposite hand to him, which was my right hand. And I said, oh, that's easy to remember. And we went over it for like half an hour being stupid kids. And I will, if you were to ask me at any point in my life, like, Lloyd, quickly, we need to turn on the Google map. Which way is it? I will always tell you my opposite to left and right first because I memorized it wrong.
Is that why we nearly crashed it in Blackpool?
It is why we nearly crashed at Blackpool. My brain told me left and we were supposed to go right. Yeah, that was funny. I came off stage from doing my lecture and you heard of an adrenaline dump, right? Which is where you hyped up and then suddenly you crash. I'm a really confident driver and I literally had this adrenaline dump off stage. I was falling asleep at 1 in the afternoon and we got in the car, drove 2 minutes to the apartment and I nearly turned up a one-way street into oncoming traffic. First time in my life.
In all fairness, I was behind you, distracting you by trying to play you a voice note or something.
I can't remember. Yeah. Anyway, this idea of an isolated object fascinates magicians, has done for decades. It's that singularity of it. It's for me, I think it's that there is no other option. There should be, in the eyes of the audience, there's no room for exploitation when something is isolated and put under a spotlight.
Yeah.
Essentially.
It's what's absolutely perfect about it. It's like a perfect, impossible object. If you can, before any kind of effect has started, you hand it to the spectator or is participant what you say now?
I heard someone say that you're not supposed to say part spectator if they're involved in the effect.
All right, okay.
So I with you. Try to toe that line to quell potential trolls. I go, you said spectator, but they chose a card, so they're actually a participant.
And then of all the things in the world to get up in arms about. Well,
yeah.
If you hand it to the participant before any kind of an effect begins, there's no room for funny business.
Yeah, basically, if you're watching Illusions on stage, I guess then you're a spectator.
True.
And if you're getting up and involved, then you're a participant.
Gotcha.
You hear the scratches of my dog in the background on the floor, like a lunatic.
Let me out.
I love that you honed in on the key ring with a folded car inside. What was you all thinking on it? Where would you go with it?
Well, I was kind of torn because at first I was just using it as a prop to kind of come up with my own little variant on the trick that cannot be explained, where you whittle down the deck with the help of the participant They make all the decisions and it ends up on one specific card that's left in the deck. And I was just trying to come up with my own little variants on the particular stages of the routine. I mean, it is a jazzing routine, so there's no way to really define it completely. That's why it's the trick that cannot be explained, right?
Yeah.
But I also wanted to kind of add a little bit of a mentalism approach to it. And that's where I've been stuck on, because I don't want it to be a pure psych force. Not that there's anything wrong with the psych force. It's one of the most insane things in the world when you can nail completely. And when you have that ability to get it, you know, 99% of the time, a psych force is beautiful. But I didn't want it to be as cut and dry as a psych force. I want to mix in both parts, both elements.
And there's so much room for error with a psych force. That's the problem. Yeah. It's all well and good in theory having like a perfect script which delivers your rational thinking participant to the correct card. But all that goes out the window when it comes to performing. And whether somebody's drunk, whether they don't follow the very important, precise piece of instruction. Psych forces are fantastic for a tool, but I think you always need to have a plan B. I think that's the thing with a psych force. You can work your life away trying to get the perfect psych force, but I think the perfect psych force only exists with a plan B to coincide with it.
Yeah. I think that's why I kind of like the approach of having this side of mentalism to it and a side of just pure magic. So there's a prop. Maybe there's a deck of cards. Maybe there's not a deck of cards. I'm not sure yet. There's like so many different ways to go with it. I just wanted to kind of... What excited you about it? What excites you about that idea?
Of the card and the keychain specifically. Yeah. I do a lot of things. I talk about this a fair bit. It's just I call it the magpie effect. There's probably a better term for it. But often we're visual creatures for the most part. And I look at, sometimes I'll think about what two objects just look cool.
Yeah.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but I think like a folded card looks great. But a folded card and a keychain looks way more interesting.
Yeah.
I watched a video actually earlier on YouTube, and it was about this guy, and it was about how he was growing his channel or something like this, or about how he kept his videos engaging. What was he doing differently to other people? And what he did in the start of his videos, he lights a candle. So he says, in this video, I'm going to teach you X, Y, Z. And he lights a candle and just puts it on display. There's no reasoning for the candle at all. Other than when you're watching that, like first few seconds, the hook that just is appealing. You know, it like sort of captures the imagination a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that's applicable. Certainly something I've done so much in so much of my creativity is at least just look for objects that I just feel have an appeal to them. I rewatched JJ Abraham's Mystery Box TED Talk. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that, but I've read a little bit about it and that whole concept and the way it operates, always having something.
Yeah, it's just that something. And there's loads that I'm not a fan of with JJ Abraham's, loads that I am a fan of. And that mystery box is sort of a really nice cinematic way to describe what I think I've just called it the magpie effect, just something which looks cool. But adding a story to it makes it much more of a mystery box then. So with that being said, if you could turn that keychain into a mystery box, and I say that with air quotes, how what would be a cool way of doing it in performance? No, but you know, it could just be as simple as this keychain was the first thing that came to my mind yesterday when you said this is one of the topics we could be covering today, was that I thought it'd be really cool to, when you take that folded card out of the keychain, that it wasn't actually a fully folded card and that it was a card that had been torn in half or just over half and then folded up to hide the tear, so they believe up until it's revealed that it's a folded card, and actually the I don't know, whatever the crescendo is that from the very beginning, it was something more and something less physically. Right. Because it could be cool that they, like, imagine an effect with somebody. Okay, so this is the bare bones. This isn't what you should do. But somebody goes to the deck and takes out a card and it's left out jogged and signed like this. And maybe it stays out jogged. Or maybe it's even less, right? So there's a deck in new deck order. They choose one card, it gets out jogged, they sign it, and you leave it out jogged. You put it back in, and now you say, if I snap my fingers, the card's gone. And now you spread through the deck and they can see the card's vanished. And you look at it and you're spreading it like chest height for anyone who's listening over any podcast platforms. But when you spread it further, they can see the card hasn't gone, but half the card is gone. And now it starts to create some sort of like storyline, some A to Z points. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now when it comes to taking out that keychain, it's the remaining half of that card.
Yeah, it's like any good murder mystery. You need to be able to rewatch it and see in the first half. Oh, you can see the butler going in the closet.
Oh, I like that. I like that. What if you give them a hint? There's a word for this. Is it called the MacGuffin?
Oh yeah, MacGuffin is a fake out kind of object that's just there to propel the plot.
Okay, maybe not so much that then. But what if there's something that indicates that it was obviously going to be half a card,
right,
in the keychain at the very beginning, but they only caught on to it the second time around.
I'm trying to think of what a physical representation of there is only going to be half the card would look like. I mean, there's the obvious way of just incorporating it into the script, and you know, when they're picking a card, say to them, you know, no half measures, don't do this by halves, and that kind of stuff. That seems a little bit tacky though. What's a physical representation of this is what the end of the trick is going to look like?
It could be that you begin with a photo in a key frame, in a keychain, and it's a photo of, I don't know, your grandmother, and it's just a picture of her in the keychain, and then you talk about how your grandfather was a bad man. So this was a family photo where he was torn out of it.
Right.
Right. So it begins there, which sets the physical premise of this is half an existence. This exists in half its form to where it once was. Now, I don't know. I do get worried about towing that like really pretentious line of storytelling at the same time, you know, where you're just trying to make things fit, or where you start making the cards tell a story and the four kings went to the bank. Like, I'm very conscious of that at all time, but I'm just using that as a parallel to draw, to make. I really love that you had that thought to tie it to a murder mystery.
Yeah, maybe there's something interesting there. In the back of my head, all I want to do is like reach into really traditional mentalism methods, but I think there's something better. There's something better for it. You know, an isolated card effect that is a little bit different.
It could be, this is thinking out loud, so don't judge me, but it could be as silly as they pick the it sounds so hokey, saying aloud. So, but they pick the three of clubs, and inside the keychain is the six of clubs. But as you unfold it, it is only half of the six of clubs.
Right.
So it's just the three of clubs. It's not an impossible. It's not a teleportation type effect. But it's something kind of cool on the way to it.
Mm. It's a plot line. It's a punchline, not a plot line, though, isn't it?
Oh, that's juicy. I don't really understand what that means. Can you explain
it to me? I don't understand what it means. I just want it to sound smart.
I'm thick. I actually don't really know what that means. It's very good though.
So there is something there with a six of clubs being three of clubs because it's split in half. But then there's the whole why.
Okay, what about this? This could be silly, this could be cool, I don't know. This is based off an idea I had for something else, which I'll explain at another time, because it's a whole different trick. But all right, so inside the keychain, we know as the magician, as the performer, that there's a torn six of clubs, torn in half. But to everybody else, it's a folded up mystery card.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have you select a card. You select three of clubs. I don't know what that card is. Now I'm going to hand you that card to hold on to behind your back. Okay. So you can't see it, but you're holding on to it tightly. And there's no reason to believe it's not the three. Whatever way I do it, it's clean.
Yeah.
So now I say you're holding on to one card. I don't know what it is inside this keychain right from the very beginning. And maybe the card is a different color in the keychain. Right from the very beginning, there's a card that's been isolated the entire time. Wouldn't it be incredible if the card in the keychain matched the exact card you picked? I unfold it. They see it's a six of clubs. And then I unfold it a bit more. They can see it's just half of a six of clubs. I say, what was the card you chose? They say the three of clubs. I say, oh, well, kind of close. There's three clubs there. So I say, bring the card out to show everyone what it is. And now when you bring the card around, it's the other half of that six of clubs.
Right.
And the three of clubs has transformed into half of a torn red-backed six of clubs. Wouldn't that just be a fun trick? Completely, I don't even know what the effect is. Like, I don't even know what traditionally that effect would be called.
Yeah. I'm not too sure if I know. So they have chosen the three of clubs, and in some kind of fashion, they're holding a torn six of clubs in their fingertips behind their back.
Yeah, so I've got an eight of clubs here, right? Hear this up. So inside the keychain, there's this folded card that looks like a fully folded card, right? So that'll be left on display. And then to the participant, and I say, here's the card. I'm going to hand it to you behind your back.
Oh, right.
They're now holding it. I say, bring the card back out. And they bring it out. And now they're holding on half of a torn card. So they're like, what? This is not my... That's not the full card you put in my hand 5 minutes ago. And now it matches the card inside. I don't even know what the trick is, because you're not... Unless you force them, the six of clubs to begin. So they think of the six of clubs, right?
Yeah.
Then you get a card wrong. So you show them the three of clubs. Like, oh, well, close, same suit, half as good. In fact, what we'll do is this. I'm going to put your hand behind your back. I'm going to pass you the three of clubs behind your back. You hold on to it. Now that's been switched for half of a six, that other half of the torn six of clubs. And I say, we'll come back to this in a moment. Or maybe they just hold it under the table, whatever they want to do. They just feel like they're holding the three of clubs
though. Yeah.
Even though they've chosen that six. Now you open up the keychain, say, before I began, I made a prediction. It's the six of clubs. Ta-da. Unfold the remainder of the six of clubs, and then you can see it's half remaining. And now when they pull it out, you can show that it's the other half of that six of clubs. And maybe it's gone from the deck too.
Maybe.
I don't know.
There's something there, isn't there? It's something where you need to...
I just love this concept of them holding what they think is their card or an incorrect card. And when they bring it back into view, it's a completely different object. Not fully different object, but it's different card in a different form.
Yeah. No, I like it as well. I'm trying to think of where the justifications are for certain parts of it. Why are you asking them to hold it under the table or behind their back?
Yeah.
What are you filling the gap with for the time misdirection?
Hmm. This is like kind of like the nuts and bolts stuff, isn't it? Like the stuff you. But this and this for anyone listening, like this is really like this is. You mentioned yesterday you were one of the topics was going to be card in a keychain. We genuinely haven't discussed it any further than that, and definitely nothing to do with any of this.
No.
This is how, like, for people wondering how creative sessions work, this is it. This is really what happens. You talk about the plot, you talk about the concept, the idea, some of the magical moments, and then you fill in the sort of the grammar.
Mm. You get really excited about something and then someone shoots it down and you find a way to do it better.
Exactly that. If you condition them to think that's part of the process to begin with, maybe the card is chosen out of sight.
Ah, right.
Maybe they take the deck under the table. They cut, you know, because for what it's worth at the minute, I'm not taking any option for method off the table. Start with the obvious methods and get rid of them. So hand them a one-way force deck under the table.
Yeah.
Have them shuffle it. Take one card, hand you back the deck. So now they have one card isolated under the table, right? So now they can bring this card up to show. And maybe some reason there's a potential reason to hand it to you, which we'll add. Maybe they bring it up and you have to try to guess what it is.
Yeah.
Like ESP. So maybe they hold it up in front of their face. You try and read them, you get it faux wrong. Maybe you just very casually reach over and have a look. You know, you don't even ask. You just take a look at it. Ah, three of clubs.
Yeah.
Okay, way off. You say, you know, hold back onto it again. So now you come under the table, switch it for a half piece. You hold back onto it. We'll come back to it in a moment. Maybe you need a reason to give it back to them, right? Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. But maybe the reason is you take a look at it. Ah, okay. Well, you hold back onto it, switch. And now you say, I'm going to have you shuffle it back into this deck. And you've got to shuffle it back into the deck. And then maybe you're like, no, let's try something different. Keep hold of it. But now you've established a reason for them to take that card back under, because they're now going to lose it back into the deck. And as a 11th hour thing, you change your mind. Actually, we'll come back to that. Keep hold of it, but we'll shuffle it in later. I want you to hold onto it. Yourself, I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking in terms of audience management. If both their hands were under the table originally anyway, then there's always the temptation to grab hold of the card. But if you said to them, keep hold of it and keep your other hand up here because I need you to do a wash on the table with the cards, maybe.
Mm.
There's some way where they don't fiddle with the card with both hands under the table.
Oh, so occupy their other hand.
Yeah.
That's good. Maybe they do like a voodoo thing where they pretend they rip it. No. What if, I don't know, all that's going through my head is doing two card Monty behind their back.
Mm.
So like you come up, you're like, right, we're going to play this game behind your back. So you've got two cards. I'm going to switch one for one. And as you're doing this, you can secretly input a half a card. But as you come out, you're like, okay, I've got the seven of hearts now. Now I've got the seven of diamonds. I'm not going to tell you how many times I switch it. You've got to try and track the count. Which card am I holding? Now you show them the back of one card. And they're like, oh, seven of diamonds. And I've got the seven of hearts. Keep hold of it. We're going to come back to that in a moment. Now you've effectively switched for the half card. They're standing there. And they really deep. Like if anyone does two card Monty, you know how deeply they believe that they're holding the particular cards just because it's so much intrinsic like conditioning layered in there. But now they're holding this half a card.
That's like, it's a pretty clean route to them holding it, isn't it? Where there's some distraction, misdirection.
What if it's this? Wouldn't this just be a fun trick? Forget the keychain for now.
Yeah.
You do two card Monty behind the participant's back. So you say, I've got two cards. I've got a black card and a red card. I'm going to put them in your hands. So they take your hands in your back. You have to play a guessing game because people do guessing games behind their back, right? So this is quite like a playground universal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which card do you think you're holding? And you can show them. And maybe you do this all like one-handed so that they can see that you're... So you just reach it behind their back. Which card is it now? Now, if I do it an odd amount of times, you'll always be holding the opposite card. If I do it an even amount of times, you'll always be holding the same card. It's a very simple rule. The only trick is you have to track whether it's odd or even. So, which card, if I show you this card, which card is in your hand? They can wait for a while, whatever, right? And then you say, no or yes, it's actually this card. But wouldn't it be cool at this point to just say, watch, tear this card in half in front of them. Make the other half vanish if you want to. Gone. Now you're holding half a card and you say, just reach. Now just pull that card out from behind your back and imagine it matched perfectly on.
It's like...
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, that would
because,
be fun.
Because like, they've been holding it the entire time, and especially if it matched.
Yeah, I think there's something cool there about the half cards. It's just like a nice new twist on the Monty.
Yeah, that holding half a card feels just like one full card.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that they can actually, unless they like really feel, they can feel around, and it's dude. I'm gonna try that on Kaylee.
Yeah, I think that's worth trying. There's something that I feel like there's something just after it. There's one more step to it.
Mm. Okay, so play out the effect, right? You virtually perform it to me.
Wait there. Sorry, the dead air must be so annoying, but sometimes you do just have to like think for a moment.
Yeah, well, Jake starts to think. I'm trying to... What would be... The game. The game is just guess the card, right? Two card Monty behind their back. Doesn't seem too... In my head, I'm running through what are the reasons to not do this? Why is this a bad trick? Why is this a bad trick? Why is this a bad premise? It's quite fun. If you don't frame it as a trick to begin with, it starts much more innocently than where it ends. Okay, so virtually run through the motions to me, what you have in mind at least.
I still don't have something fully in mind yet. I'm still stuck on the step after.
Dude, what if it wasn't done with playing cards? The only reason I say this is because I have a bunch of salt and pepper packets here.
Oh.
Right?
Right.
Salt and pepper packets.
Yeah.
See, it's a very simple game. Can you tell the difference between salt and pepper? And then you do this behind their back at their fingertips and you switch them around for whatever reason. So you say, I'm going to come out, I'm going to hold them in my fist. You have to keep holding them. Do you think it's salt or pepper? Can you tell by the weight? Blah, blah, blah. All right. And then for whatever reason, they're right or they're wrong. And now at this point you say, look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tear open this salt packet and I'm going to make the top half disappear. And you tear it in a very particular way. You know, and now you say that I don't know whatever the reason is to do this, but then you say this isn't the trick. The trick is that you've been holding that torn piece since before this whole thing began. Now they bring it out and it's the matching torn remainder of the packet.
What if you did it so that both of the packets they were holding were both half and half?
Oh, and then it ends up restored?
Maybe.
So you begin. So I got a packet of salt here. There's a top and a bottom. There's the McDonald's M here and the right there. I'm going to tear this in half. You're going to hold each half behind your back. I'm going to swap them around. And the game is very simple. Top or bottom. Up or down. Right?
Right. I've played that game before.
Yeah, brilliant. And then I was thinking, do you remember that program, Strike It Rich? Top, middle, or bottom?
Yeah.
Michael Barrymore. But then they go through this whole process. And at the end, you bring out the one half salt. That says salt as opposed to the logo. And now you can make that part vanish. And if it's a small salt packet, you can like make it do the thumb vanish or whatever.
Yeah.
And I say, bring out the piece from behind your back. And it's restored back on. The only thing with that is that there's no definitive proof that it was the piece. currently, unless it was signed. But then I always find it quite, we tend to want to sign everything.
Yeah.
Where it's only a thought, an afterthought of magicians, as opposed to lay people. Some have, but very rarely go, but could you do it signed?
Mm.
It's not really the thing for them, you know?
No, that's not the request.
Unless it's one of those things where you put like a faux tear in it. So do you remember that video I put up with Kaylee and I did the card in Sharpie? And instead of having to sign it,
yeah,
like I say, oh, I'm going to tear the card like this. Oh, actually, no, that's a bit too small. I'm going to tear a bit more. And I put a faux duplicate tear in there.
Yeah.
So maybe you do the same with this, right? You say, like, look, I'm going to tear the salt packet in half. Oh, that's probably not in half. Maybe let me do this more in half. Now the extra piece has a faux tear, which is going to be a duplicate to it later on. And then it works like that. That could be kind of interesting.
I'm trying to think of a way that you could do it where you start off by ripping both a salt and a pepper packet and having them have it behind their backs, trying to guess which one is which. And somehow you have it so that it restores, but it restores wrong. So the top so half is pepper. Salt. Yeah, so it's salt and pepper. It actually inside it as well as the...
Mm. Oh, that's cool to have it mixed inside.
Mm.
Dude, this is such a... That's such a great, like remember souvenir Lincoln rubber bands?
Yeah, yeah.
That's such a great thing. Imagine you could just buy like 100 mixed salt and pepper packets that were half and half. I would totally buy some and they came with a real salt and a regular pepper.
Yeah.
So then you can take them and like slam them together visually or do any kinds of create like in the hands of the spectator, like SpongeBob type things with it.
And salt and pepper is already a great name for a release.
there
might be some little gimmick there somewhere.
Yeah, it's super cool. It, although with an effect like that, I always tend to like once you have the impossible souvenir object, I try to go as like minimal as possible. Then,
yeah.
But man, going back to the card trick, I really, 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 really like that premise of the card. Like jumping into their hands when they think it's the idea of them thinking it's a full card.
Yeah.
And then the look on their face when it's a half card, but it has meaning as well. It completes the story.
What about if you said to them, oh no, that wouldn't work. Would it work?
I don't know.
When they have the original card that is a full card, and you've got their hands under the table. What about if you said to them, can you just draw a line down the center of the card? Or what would be an easy thing they could draw that you could duplicate that could then be on the half that's in the key ring and the half you hand them, you switch out for?
Oh.
Or if you just said to them, scribble on it under the table.
Yeah.
They don't know what the scribble looks like.
Well, it's... The way that I do Angle Zero, the signed version, would work 100% for that circumstance. I'm just trying to figure out like mechanics of a one hand switch for a full card to a half card.
Right.
So I'm holding it with like the half card behind. I just sort of reach around their back, out jog this into their fingertips. And then I could, and I'm probably the worst magician in the world at this, but as you come back, you can place the card into back palm and then just reload it onto the bottom of the deck. You know, so they see you come back with an empty hand and, well, you could just ditch it in your pocket if you needed to as you go for a Sharpie or go for the keychain.
They could have the deck, so there's the justification of, can you pass me the deck back and I'll swap. We'll swap. You give me the deck back and I'll give you your card you chose back. So both your hands are under the table and it's a little bit, there's less kind of like heat.
Yeah, unless you, so say it's going to be a black card and a red card, right? So I've got a nine of clubs and the two of hearts here. You show a nine of clubs and the two of hearts. Maybe behind the two, I've got the half card loaded.
Yeah.
Or something like this, or behind the uppermost card. And then as I come down, literally I'm going to ditch off the one card and then place them both in their fingertips behind their back.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to go through the switching procedure. Mm-hmm. The first time I'll show the nine of clubs. The second time I'll still show the nine of clubs, but I won't. I'll show the back. I'll be like, oh, yeah. No, it's two of hearts. Right, we'll do it again. And I'm just miscalling it. But they just think it's the two of hearts because they've seen it at the beginning. They felt me switch the cards around, and I'm telling them it's the two. I'm going to one more time. I'm bring out this time it's the nine. Or use a double backer. A double facer, double facer, a nine of clubs and a two of hearts, double facer.
That makes most sense.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
That makes it really, really practical.
That makes it more. Trying to backtrack where the switch happens is not going to happen.
Yeah, because at this point now, you can have. They hold them, they can feel tangibly two cards in their hand.
Yeah.
You talk about how you're going to switch them. Bum, bum, bum. Your hand's very open. You bring out, boom, the nine of clubs. Switch for switch. Which card are you going to do the two? The only thing is you can't show the back of it.
Yeah.
But maybe the last time is just that you take it and you say, I'm not even going to show you the back or the front of this card in case you've spotted a sneaky mark in that I haven't. So you take it and you place it behind your own back.
Yeah.
At which point it gives you a great excuse to like grab a half card from your pocket and then show, I actually am holding half a torn card. But then what's the reason? There's no reason for that. It's just kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's just
a
weird moment.
It's I mean, it's perfectly fine to jam the mechanics or something without any kind of justification or blah.
Yeah.
It's just once you find that, it's going to be so much better. Once you find hook, the real hook. I mean,
what if you do this?
Spectacle at the end, but what's the hook?
Okay. Sorry for interrupting.
No, go for it.
What if you begin, you say, when I was a kid, we used to play this game where you take a card, you make two cards out of it by tearing it in two. And then what you would do is behind your friend's back, you'd guess which piece you were holding, whether it be the top, maybe there'd be a reason to signify which is the top, which is the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it was a card like a seven of clubs. So it has an extra pip on one side. So yeah. So you take a seven of clubs and tear it in half. And you say, so this one's got three pips. This one's got four. The game would be that we switch the cards behind the back. And whoever had the card with the least amount of pips would be the loser. And they'd have to forfeit and go and buy sweets for everyone or whatever the forfeit would be at school. And you say, but I was really crafty. What I would do is that I would recognize the jagged edges, and by feel alone, I could tell which card was which, and I would never lose. And my friends picked up on this one day, and they found a way to stop me from winning every time. Any ideas how they did that? People would either guess or not. You say it was actually the most simple solution of all. They just used two cards with no tears. And now you introduce your two cards, your nine of clubs and your two of hearts. So this way it makes it much more difficult to play. Will you indulge me in this simple game for no money? You know, whether you win or lose, I'll buy the beers. I don't drink, but you know what I mean? So now you say, look, it's very simple. And I think by showing you this as a participant, you will understand how difficult the game is to win. Go through the motions. Nine of clubs or two of hearts. Nine of clubs or two of hearts. And eventually, you say, I'm not going to even show you the back design because you, like me, may have your own secret system in place now. Yeah. Maybe you let them win a couple of times. Right. Say, I think I'm onto you. You've spotted something that I don't know about. So we'll do this. This time, I'm going to take it and hide it behind my back so you can't see the markings. And then this time, you switch it back to the card at the beginning, the torn card.
Yeah.
They're already holding the torn card. But they have no idea. And you say, and maybe you start at the very beginning of the trick. So you say, remember this, we'll come back to it later. And then you do the whole presentation. And then at the very end, you say, so I'm holding one card, you're holding one card. Which card do you think you're holding? And they say, nine of clubs or two of hearts. So you, and then you say, you remember at the very beginning, you said, remember this image, we'll come back to it later. I want you to slowly bring your hand out in front of you. Or maybe you bring out your hand first. Say, I'm holding onto this card. And then they bring their hand out and they're holding on to the other half of it.
Yeah. I think
trick,
that is fun because how believable is the story?
Yeah.
The game? Yeah.
it's a simple game.
Yeah.
And it got this moment of, it's got that two card Monty kick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you in theory, they could bring out the two halves of the torn card from the beginning.
Yeah.
Which card are you holding? They bring it out, and now they got the two halves. Doesn't have the same feel to it for me.
Mm.
I quite like the idea of them bringing out just the half card, and you've got the matching half in your hand. But still, either it's one of those things. Maybe you test it. You know, like I always think, Colossal Killer is one of those tricks that if I'd ever come up with it, I would have that off by one thing. I would have probably dismissed.
Yeah.
But actually, whenever you do Colossal Killer, you pray that they're off by one because it hits so much harder for an unexplained reason. I mean, you can explain reasons why or theory why, but it could be one of those things where maybe it hits really strong with when they're holding one half, or maybe somehow you say, like, I'll put this one back, which was on top, which was on bottom. Are you holding, is the two hearts touching your thumb? Or is the two hearts touching your index finger? Go ahead, bring them out. Boom. And now they've got the two cards from the very beginning.
At the start, when you're telling the story, if you weren't using an asymmetric design, you could say what we used to do is I would sign the top of one half and my friend would sign the top of one half. So will you just write your name there? I'll write my name just so I can show you.
And then
when you come back to it, before you show them it with the full cards, you could say, we'll get rid of those, or where dump them in, pretend to dump them in the deck or dump them in the pack, sorry. Just so that there's some kind of extra recognition about it being the card from the start.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it could be as simple as they write win and lose on each one.
Yeah.
Win or lose. And I know so many people would be tempted to restore them at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't do that.
No, I don't think
this doesn't have to be forced to be a TNR.
No.
This is a story on its own.
Yeah, it's like a gambling demonstration, but with being an annoying little child.
Everyone that does two card Monty, oh, not everyone, so many people reveal the two cards at the end, either by going to their pocket or in the deck.
Yeah.
I personally don't like that. I always feel like it's like a band coming on for an encore and not playing one of their hit songs.
Yeah.
Nothing is better than the moment when they turn their hands around and then to follow it on by being like, oh, and now they're in my pocket. It's kind of like, wah, oh, cool. And if you watch people perform it, they go, wah, huh, oh yeah, they are in your pocket. Like no one cares.
No.
And I feel like it might be the same with this, is that because in my head I was like, well, what if those that nine of clubs and that two of hearts ends up in my pocket?
Mm.
Or ends up in the trash where we threw away the two halves of the card at the beginning. I don't really know if that adds anything to it.
No, I don't think it needs to. It's some effects, like a 1-2 punch does work with them, but I don't think something like this needs that. I mean, it could very easily be part of a multi-stage thing, but the effect on its own doesn't need anything. I don't think so.
No. The only time that revealing two-card Monty cards being elsewhere works is when you reveal them first.
Yeah.
So, as in, they think they're holding on to two black threes. Then you reveal that actually the two black threes are in your pocket from the start. Yeah. So that means they're holding on to the two red sevens now.
Yeah, because you're still saving the final reveal.
Yeah, yeah. So with that being said, I wonder if this works in the same way. Is that you, whatever you discard the what's interesting is that when you tear a card up, you naturally would put it in your pocket as opposed to back in the deck.
Oh, I see what you're getting at. Yeah, so if you were to say, keep them behind your back for a second. Let's grab the torn card from the start. And then you pull out the two full cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, oh, dude, maybe that's the effect, right? This is fucking sick.
It's nice.
Pardon my French. I could really see, everything in my head, I don't know for who your significant person is, but for me, it's always like, if I'll judge an effect, whether I think it'll be good for Kaylee or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So I'd say, all right, I'm going to show you this childhood game that I used to play. I'd take a card, we'd tear it up, and we'd write winner and loser on the top and bottom half of the card. Very simply, we'd put them behind our back. They'd be mixed up, and whichever card you pull out, kind of like short straws, whoever had the loser would have to go and buy the sweets of the day. The thing is, being a crafty little bugger, I would always feel which tier shape was which, and I very quickly learned how to win every time. But even quicker were my friends who realized that I could win quickly and how I did it. So they've developed a system. As six-year-olds, they caught me out. This is their brilliant idea. Do you have any idea what it is, Kaylee? She'd say no. I'd say they used two cards. They got rid of the tiers. It's impossible to tell. So I'll put these away and we'll grab two cards out the deck, the two and the nine. So I've put the two torn halves back in my pocket, in my back pocket, whatever. So I'd say, now try and do it. And maybe I get her to try and see how easy it is to feel the difference in tiers or difficult.
Yeah.
So she has that tangible feeling to it. Now we'll go into the switching it behind the back. So now you hold on to two cards. One's a two, one's a nine. Very simply, if I pull this one out, which card do you think you're holding? It's a 50-50 because I haven't given you any indication of how you could know. So I show her it's the two or the nine. Now I say, now I'm going to switch them. But if I switch it an even amount of times, you'll be holding the same card like this. Da-da-da-da-da. And now I can show the double facer. The same side. If I switch it an odd amount of times, you'll be holding the opposite card. That's just how it works. So you double in or whatever. So the only thing you have to do is track if I'm switching it an odd amount of times or an even amount of times. Okay. Now I say, I'm not even going to show you the card that you're holding on to. I'm going to place it behind my back. Which card do you think you're holding on to? I'm not going to show you because maybe you found some secret markings. Then she says, the nine or the two. And I very slowly, the interesting thing is that this two halves of a card looks like two halves of a card, right? These two halves of my pocket. So I can say,
yeah,
somehow with one hand behind my back, I said, this hand's going behind my back. But I'm going to, before I go do anything, I'm going to reach into my pocket and show you something. You can see there's two halves of a card here. And I can show the back and the two solid halves of that card. I say, this is the torn five of hearts or whatever it was. So the interesting thing is this is not actually one card torn in half, but this is actually two full cards. And now I bring up and show that it's two full cards where I've just thrown on the floor. Now there's that moment of like limbo where like, hold on. That's the card I'm holding. And now I'd say that means if these two cards are the ones that you were holding, if you and I are holding, then the card behind my back must be boom. And then I show one half of the five of hearts. And then I say, and you're holding the other half. Is that more confusing?
It needs to be, you need to play it out and watch it, don't you?
Yeah.
A couple more times. You need to. But what's funny is you kind of just nailed the script in one, though, because you've even got the laugh in there about using full cards.
Yeah, which is great. It could just be. So often lately, as I'm like in pursuit of magic, as opposed to implausibilities.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like any card, any number. It's all implausible, but not impossible.
Yeah.
Whereas a piece of magic where they are holding two cards that become two halves, you know, whatever, it's magic. I often lose sight of that.
Yeah. I also do honestly really like the fact that it gets away from all the trappings of a traditional gambling scam demonstration, because there is the humor and the slightly like cheekiness of being, this is what I did when I was a kid. And it gets away from that whole, I'm that card shark with the blindfold who does this.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing with Chukamonti. Whenever I perform it, I never have a reason. Almost, yeah. Okay, we're going to do it. I think I always use, like, we're going to do a game of observation to see how close you follow along. The closer you look, the less you see, some sort of Arthur Conan Doyle quote. And yeah, but this is good, right? Because the hook is real. Well, it's not real, but it's relatable.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. That's what I really like about the fact that that is a believable game. I would have played that as a kid.
It's just rock, paper, scissors. Or yeah. Short straw, right? It's just that on a playground level.
It's just a short straw, yeah.
I'm trying to think in my head, like, is there any way to incorporate a mystery box? Is it a photo? Do you take a photo behind their back? Right. I mean, so adding something for no reason. Other than it's just like, it's the memorable element.
I think it can exist without that as a very simple but fun trick. But the best part about coming up with certain effects for me is, does this need another stage? Does there need to be another level of complexity to it? Does there need to be another little memorable moment? And just trying everything.
Yeah. What if it's this, right? At the beginning, you tear the card in half. You say, I'm going to write win or lose on the tops, or you're going to write win or lose on the tops of these cards. And I'm going to take a photo of the tears. And I hold cards, if for anyone that can't see the camera, I'm holding them like two cards spread, but my hands are covering where the remainder of the cards are, but these are two half torn cards, right? So it looks basically from the front, I could actually be holding two full cards, but they know because they can see that I'm holding two torn cards. And it looks like it looks fairly normal to hold them.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
And I'd come up at this point and I would take a photo of my hands in front of their faces holding the two torn cards. And I say, so this is that I can check the tears, or I know specifically, whatever, you know, it kind of sounds believable, right? I'm going to take a photo as proof of which tear represents which winning or losing half. But secretly, I could be taking a picture of the nine and the two.
Yeah.
Because I'm holding these cards in a way that makes it look like they're full cards. So at the end, you say, oh, you remember at the very beginning, we even took a photo of the two torn cards. Let's take a look at that photo. And in the background is the, you know, it's the two full cards and their faces as the proof. Overkill adds a lot of extra steps.
That's what you have to worry about sometimes, isn't it? There's 2 minutes of dialogue. There's 2 minutes of script in there where you could just lose someone completely. And they're like, I'm stood here, not doing anything, not involved, and not really very interested.
Yeah. Yeah. Is the payoff worth the procedure?
Yeah.
Is that a new quote?
It is now.
Is the payoff worth the procedure?
First t-shirt.
If anybody's listened that this far, so far, comment that down below. First t-shirt, yeah. We could cover this much more in depth, but I think we should maybe this is enough for episode one for the first topic. We do have some questions to get through as well.
Yeah.
I don't want this to be a long, I think, more sizable. I was going to say bite size, but that's like 3 minutes. More digestible length episodes.
Yeah. Well, what's funny about that is that is like a prime example of the chaos in creativity, though, because I was asking it about a keyring. You know, could we do some kind of plot with this? Could there be a gimmick? Is it mentalism? No, we'll just make up a childish Monty.
Childhood Monty. I love it, man.
Yeah.
Monty Python. That's the other half of creativity, is the fun names.
Yeah.
What would you call it?
Sometimes I come up with names first.
Genuinely.
Yeah.
What would be a good name for that? Child Monty.
Half Monty.
Half Monty.
Pint Monty.
Torn and half Monty.
The half Monty.
Half Monty. That's quite cool. It's a double entendre.
Yeah.
Based off the full Monty and two card Monty. One card Monty.
I think a one card Monty already exists.
Yeah, it's just called mystery card. Is it your card or is it not? It's your card. No one ever does a trick where it's just not. I'm sure they do, and I'm wrong. Should we get into some... the next section of the podcast is listeners' questions. So, yeah, I went off on a tangent. I daydreamed. Obviously, the podcast didn't exist until this very moment in time. Only the concept of it did. So to aid us in that non-existent quest for questions, we asked three friends. And those friends are, drumroll, Jake. Who are they?
Young Sam Sugarman. Tyler Lunsford.
Tyler Lunsford, cardboard magician.
And Rory of Wanahead fame.
The famed Rory of Wanahead. So I'm going to play the podcast questions right now. I'm guessing in post we're going to record them in better quality.
Yeah.
In higher quality. But we should both be able to hear this live and unfiltered right now. So the first question is from Tyler Lunsford, cowboy magician. If you don't follow him already, please go and follow him on YouTube. And also, I made the mistake of not listening to these first. I listened to Rory's because he said one audio quality was better than the other, but I don't know what Sam and Tyler's question is. So I hope that they're not offensive.
Yeah, I hope so too.
What's up to the sheep?
Wait, you went silent.
I thought that was you just censoring. Podcast.
No, I put it in front of the
mic. What's up to the sheep? What's the wrong podcast? Bad. Hey guys, Tyler Lunsford here. Lloyd, Jake, Lloyd, I don't know how you're introducing yourselves yet, but yeah, Jake and Lloyd and Jake, somebody. Answer this question, or both of you can. I would love to know what you both think about an original magic trick. What do you think constitutes as an original magic trick? Is there so much originality in it that, you know, it's nothing we've ever seen before? Obviously, that is an original magic trick. But when you're using something that was based off of something else, what do you think constitutes it as original? Is it the amount of crediting? Is it the amount of approval you get from people around you saying, yeah, that looks different? Or is it like, you know, you add a certain amount of moves or you add a different gimmick? Or what do you think makes an original magic trick from something that was similar in the past? But, you know, what makes it different enough to release again or release this new version as a new person or even as a 2.0? But yeah, I would love to hear what you guys have to say. Anyways, take care to the Welsh Wonder Wizard and Jake. I really hope you add more to this podcast than you did to that tutorial we filmed in Blackpool. Anyways, take care, guys, and have a ship. Oh, still wrong podcast. Okay, my bad.
Wow, Tyler. Call me out or what, man? I was tired that morning and I was very sad. So I am aware I added nothing extra to the tutorial.
I do believe you'd been for like a 7 a.m. run.
Yeah.
That morning.
I think it was earlier than that.
What constitutes a new trick?
What constitutes an original trick when it's based off a previously existing kind of technique method?
I really couldn't understand much of what he said because he was like, yeehaw, riding, rooting, tooting, yeah, having a good time. Wow. It's
hard to hear him with all the NASCAR in the background, isn't it? It's a strange question to answer because it is such a nebulous kind of thing because there's no clear definition about...
Can someone make a gif of Jake doing this?
Well, I mean, it just has to go far enough for someone to be able to watch it and think it was worth me watching that. If they've already seen some kind of other iteration of it.
That's a good point. What's someone's opinion that's already like bought that effect, for example?
Yeah.
Whether they think it's worth it, that's true. I mean, everyone's opinion are all going to be different, so there is that. I always used to think that I'm really caught off guard, but I used to have a thing in my head which was like, it was, I think Wilbur might have posted about it recently as well. Maybe it's Wilbur I got it from. But like the three pillars of originality in terms of magic would be, do you change the method? Do you change the presentation? And do you change the effect? And it's got to be at least two of those. There was a time when I used to go through all the effects that came through in the submissions department for a certain magic company. And that was kind of like the structure that I worked to for a few years. It was, did it have two out of the three things, different method, different presentation, different trick? Because sometimes you can have something which is the same method, same presentation, but the trick was different. Or what was it? No, the trick, what was the way around? Because you can have, like, for example, that effect we've just gone over now, that half card Monty or the half Monty, the presentation is very similar, right? Two cards switch in.
Yeah.
Eddie Factor. The method is fairly similar. Switch in under the guise of openly switch in. But the trick is different.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, because that's the hardest one to explain out of the three, I think. Difference between trick and presentation. Because the presentation is like a two-card Monty presentation. But the trick is very different. So normally I would always class it as two things, but I think your point is quite bang on as well. Like if somebody's already bought that effect, do they consider it valuable? Or does the majority of people who bought that effect consider it a valuable offering?
Yeah, I mean, it also depends on what it's built on as well. Because if there was an effect that is built upon something really recognizable, like what's a mainstream trick out at the moment? Laced up. If there was some kind of effect that was built up on that, would that be okay? Whereas obviously it's okay to have 10 million effects based on a principle.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what Tyler was really asking.
Well, I think just a general, like, open question, yeah, of what do you consider? I mean, you know, if someone used the same laced up method to do a ring flight to a necklace, I mean, like a necklace thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's not on shoelaces, but I'm not sure. I think that I've seen something along the lines of the method for laced out, but not used in the same way before.
Yeah.
So, you know, would it constitute an independent release or new release? I think a lot of it comes down to variables. Like, well, in this case, do you need to ask permission from the creator? Because it's a very unique method.
Yeah. I mean, Tyler did mention crediting and stuff, and there is precedent for that. I mean, when you think about, yourself, even like WoW gimmick kind of stuff, you know, that is a method, and there is a kind of, it can be used in other ways. So yeah, if there was other ways to use laced up, that.
Well, exactly. Like in that, with WoW, Masuda really created that technology for it. So that's why when I did WoW Money, I produced it with Masuda, because it wasn't anybody else's method to reproduce, you know? Whereas something like a coin shell, it's a very open source. I know at one point there would have been somebody who did originally create the coin shell, but not to say that, like, I'm not doing due diligence, but it's something like a coin shell is far more open source than a WoW gimmick in terms of like originality. So it's a case by case basis, I suppose.
Yeah, but I think so.
I think the reason Tyler's asking is because definitely within the last like 3 months, I feel there's been a change of the guard in terms of how far do you have to go to before you can't say that what you've got is worthy of being brought to the table.
Yeah.
You know, like how, and I say this in the least controversial sense possible, but how original, because there's nothing new in magic.
No.
Even like the WoW gimmick by Masuda is a great example, because it's such an interesting technology, the way it was all developed. But ultimately, it rests on old principles, right? I always think like Healed and Sealed is one of the most creative tricks ever. But even using the method at the heart of it, it's not giving much away, but just saying like the chemical element has been used in the past. Not for the same effect at all, not for the same presentation, but it's been used, you know, and I always think that's one of the most creative things ever. So at what point, how much do you have to peel something apart, break it down and look for every part of it that's not original before it's exhaustive and to the point of, you know, do you end up killing off great pieces of magic because people are policing ideas?
Yeah. Yeah. I think something that I would probably think about with regards to it as well is there has to be subtraction as well as addition. I think you have to take away parts of a trick. You can't just completely build on it because then you're using all of it in its entirety within your own work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously it's case by case, but I think with certain things, you can't take something fully formed. You can use the concepts and the principles and the ideas and the techniques. But I think there is a little bit of a line that's crossed when it's like three stages of a routine and that are fully formed in themselves in a separate release, and you're just adding one bit to the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I like what Rory said in one of his recent One Ahead articles, where he said people who are protective over their ideas generally don't have any.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, people who will stop everyone using something that they've worked on over, you know, everything, are normally like that way because they feel inferior or they're fearful of not having any more ideas. And he's completely right. I've worked in the magic industry for many years, and there's been instances of some people really just copying my tricks,
word
for word or gimmick for gimmick, releasing them. And then I've also had my attention brought to, like, I can think of one within the last 3 or 4 years, example of somebody came to me and they weren't releasing it, so fair play to them. They were intending to, but they had taken one of my fairly unique gimmicks that I'm known for. I'm not going to disclose what it is, but one of the things that, like, I'm if anyone does know me, they probably know me for one of this gimmick, and they'd taken another really popular gimmick by somebody else, and they'd just put them together.
Yeah.
And they said, did they have my blessing for release? And it was one of the occasions where mostly every single time I would say yes, but there was no, to me, they had done it to try to make something new out of stuff that wasn't theirs. It was a really odd one. But I actually did say, I don't feel comfortable with this.
Yeah.
And I feel, I also there was no reasoning for it. They had just combined that it was just to have a release. And neither of the elements, like, they hadn't adapted it. It was very, very modular. Combine these two things together, try to call it their own. And I actually said no, but for the most part, I haven't got the time to police the ideas.
No. And there's something to be said for just not policing ideas. I mean, the very concept of this video podcast in of itself, we've just spent quite some time discussing what could easily potentially be a decent-ish little download.
Yeah.
But who cares?
If somebody releases it, it makes me feel good that someone's listening.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's always going to be a handful of ideas that you do keep secret, and that's completely, everyone can understand that. There's stuff that I've been working on with like PK touches for years and years that I'm not putting out anywhere for a long time. Yeah. But everything
that
else,
thing,
just take
thing
it.
With PK touches is the bomb.
Thank you, man.
It's literally the most exciting use I've ever seen of PK touches ever.
Thank you, dude. I appreciate that. And like,
it's kind of how we became. friends in a way. You told me about it and I was like, holy cow, I've heard a lot of PK Touch ideas. This one is golden.
Yeah, it is a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah. But we'll cover that on another day, maybe when you bring it to the world.
100%. 100%.
But that's a great question. And I like a question that can lead us somewhere.
Yeah. Thank you, Tyler, you cowboy.
Thank you, Tyler. Next question is from little Sam Sugarman.
Oh, young Samuel.
Fellow Welshman.
Hey there, guys. Hope you're both well. What's a device or a technique in magic that you wish was easier to integrate into performances? For example, making backup less conditional, that kind of thing. Love to hear your thoughts. See you in a bit. Hey there, guys. Hope you're both.
Great question.
That's a super nice, short and sweet question. And then there's going to be a load of dead air from both of us now as we try and think.
Well, he used black art as an example. So, yeah, I'm not too afraid of using black art because I use it in ways that hides the method. What can you think of?
I wish that there was more applications for a reel.
Oh, my God. Dude. I was literally thinking, I was thinking Raven.
Yeah.
Same thing. That's so spooky.
I wish there was cooler stuff you could do with it. Not that there's not a not cool about vanishing and, you know, those kind of things, but there's got to be some original uses for it, hasn't there?
Oh, 100%. I think Sam's question was more, which stuff do you think was more like easier to bring into play?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I would, if I could just not have to wear a jacket, mm-hmm. I would do the Raven all the time. All the time. If I could do it in my sleeves, I would use it all the time. Or like a smoke machine. I genuinely think like having something, you know, with a puff of smoke around it when you do a color change, or it's properly magical. It's real magical when used sparingly and in the right context. But there's nothing that suits my like, complete basic lifestyle of I don't even have a wallet. I don't have a wallet. I just have my phone and I'll nag Kaylee to carry my keys.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
okay. If that was the point of the question, then I really wish there was a use for me using the extending cane. Like, I really wish there was a socially okay way for me to use that in the pub.
Oh yeah. Or tenyo tricks.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one, actually.
I really like Sam's question, actually. What do I think? I know one for sure. American money.
Hmm.
Paper money. We used to have paper money here.
Yeah.
There's so much you can do specifically with American money because A, it's paper, but B, it's all identically sized.
Yeah.
The bad side about that is that it makes it very lazy. In a way, like stunts creativity a little bit because you're not forcing yourself out of those parameters. That's why, like, when plastic money was introduced to the UK, I got so excited and made a bunch of like really unique magic effects for it.
Hmm.
But also, you are limited, ultimately.
Yeah, very limited in some cases. What else would you use? I'm trying to think of something that I've always wanted to use and just never been able to justify it.
Yeah. I like stuff with a silk or ribbon, like Charming Chinese Challenge, or even like thumb tip vanishes with a silk.
Mm.
When I was a kid, I had a thumb tip and a silk, or like a little red thing. And I would show all my old cousins and my uncles and everything, anyone who would watch me, for about 2 months, I had this thing, and it gave me like this power because no one could figure it out, and I was doing the worst performances you could imagine as a kid. I was like literally like 10, if that, and I remember in particular one of my cousins who was about, I don't know, 10 years old. He would be like 18, 20 at the time. Someone I really looked up to as well. I remember showing him, and he just had not patronizing, like, oh wow, I have no idea. Like if I give you £10, you tell me how that works right now. So they pulled me to the side, asking how it worked. No clue. I lost that thumb tip with a silk in it by putting it in my mouth while my mum was driving, and I was doing something stupid. I can't remember what. And I coughed and it flew out the window of the car.
Jeez. I was actually looking at the super realistic thumb tips at Blackpool. And I was half tempted because all I've got in my drawers throughout my house is those really old ones that you get in really crap magic sets.
They're perfect though.
They are. They are. But they're too big. They're too small for me.
Get a realistic one.
Yeah, well, that's what I was looking for. But then I never used them.
I just thought it was a cadaver stand. The dark arts. Yeah, because I always think, what's the more organic thing than a silk, right? Mm. But using just like a napkin is just not as pretty, is it? It's not as good. But then also a silk is just, I'm going to say it, it's just super lame. You know what I mean? I know I'm going to get slayed for that. It's not lame. It really does. If I walked in dressed like the hobo that I am somewhere and whipped out a red silk, it would scream.
It's just not of this time. Yeah. It was pretty cool when I was 9 watching David Copperfield do stuff, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't have the same appeal if you pull out like 10 Rizzlers and stick together. You know what I mean? Yeah, like a Starbucks napkin doesn't have... Although, no, I was going to say, it would be cool to make a Starbucks napkin out of the same material so it can like scrunch up extra small, but it's durable. But I got a feeling it wouldn't look like a Starbucks napkin.
I imagine there's some American street performers who use bandanas.
See, I'm the committer that if I use bandanas, most people I think have shaved head that wear a bandana, don't they? Or at least I'd like join a gang.
Oh yeah, you'd have to.
I'm serious. Like every time I have a trick and if I have a tattoo, I'll get the tattoo. If I need to do something to my persona, I'll do it.
Amazing.
So I would have to become a Crip or a Blood to perform it with a bandana.
Yeah, or start riding Harleys.
That'd work. Yeah. Then I can be like, here's my bandana. What
about that? That's the only natural justification I can think of really now, like a modern justification.
Hmm. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if you're a performer, you will have a little silk napkin hanky. So it's already justified in itself, I guess.
A microfiber screen cloth is quite common. It's kind of common for your phone, right? People carry them to clean their glasses. If you had one which was like a green, like a jade green, would look kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think there's something in like with the red silk, the reason why it works so well with the thumb tip is that it's quite astonishing because it's a big, bright red silk.
Yeah.
And that vanishes and there's... It should be easy to follow that big bright red silk. That's why it's partially so powerful. But so then to use like a, you know, Starbucks is kind of like almost like earthy kind of skin tony color. A napkin is, isn't this not as startling?
There's no vibrance there, is there?
But yeah, but there is something so powerful about vanishing that silk.
Last time I used silk in anything was the little gimmick that you could use on an iPhone so that it looked like you pulled the silk through the phone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah, they were good.
That was a great question. And so now I want a raven. I want a smoke device. I want an appearing cane and a thumb tip vanish.
And to join a gang.
And to join a gang, yeah. One more question we have, and this question is from Rory Adams and from oneahead.com. Plug. And this is the question.
Hi, guys. It's Rory from One Ahead, the free magic newsletter that all of your listeners should subscribe to, oneahead.com. I have a question.
Oops. I held it too close to the microphone.
That all of your listeners should subscribe to oneahead.com. I have a question. It's about the name of your podcast. Hopefully you won't change it before you go live. A lot of people on socials, when they use black art, they have to crush the blacks in post to make the trick work. And I think at that point, you kind of might as well just use green screen or a chroma key. Like, that's not an in-camera effect, that's post-production. So I guess my question for you guys is, where do you draw the line? What is a camera trick? What's acceptable, what's not? Lloyd, you owe me a tenner. You said you'd pay me a tenner for this. So PayPal me, maybe. Thanks.
I didn't. He said he'd pay me £20 to advertise his... no, that's not true. That's not true.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, so much of a better question than Sam. No, I'm kidding. No, it's a really good question. Thoughts?
So, I do partly agree with the black art stuff, but at the same time, it's lighting for a video. And it's color grading. And if it was in the opposite direction to make it look more cinematic, it'd be perfectly fine.
Yeah. But I think, what do you define? Where do you draw the line?
So if there was an effect I was doing where, and I have done this on Instagram, I'm performing an action and I drop something. But then I reverse it so that, you know, I have an empty hand and then all of a sudden I have an object because I've reversed my dropping it. That is a bit too far. I mean, I've still posted that on Instagram because it looked cool, but that's not something that I would say I would be proud of. But then there's things such as, like, if you're utilizing the frame, I think that's perfectly fine. If I reach forward with my hand here, and then all of a sudden I have a card because it just came from out of frame, that's okay, right? Is it?
I've always had like a pretty staunch position on this, which for myself anyway, mm-hmm. which is if I can't perform it for at least one person in real life without the camera being there,
yeah,
then it's a camera trick.
Yeah.
So everything on my YouTube, everything on my Instagram, everything on, I don't use camera tricks. There's probably a video that surfaces from the past, maybe, but I really can't think of anything. I'm like racking my brain. I don't use my, I only have one rule, which is it may be that it's very angle sensitive.
It
may be that it's, very situational. It may be that it requires loads of prep. But as long as I can 100% perform it as it looks to the camera for one, at least one person in real life a few feet away, then it's okay. Anything, but if I can't even show one person, then it's a camera trick. So if I have to do chroma key in, or for me, like I suppose ditching it out of frame is the same as lapping, right? And you can lap in real life, so that really, mm-hmm. there's certain parameters where you wouldn't have a door frame by the side of you, but you do have a tabletop. So that's not illegal.
Illegal
in this context. I generally don't use the frame
as
a way out. If anything, it'll be like, I'll use a reel to take and hide something behind me but it'll at least be that it can be performable. But when it comes to like TV, and if you see someone, using green screen and things like that, I hate seeing that on TV magic.
Yeah, there's, you know, as soon as I see that in anything, it isn't interesting to me. But if I see that on someone's Instagram, it's perfectly fine and it's fun and it is what it is. Like, I enjoy it if I'm watching it and it isn't meant to make money, I guess.
Yeah, I think it depends on how you define yourself, isn't it? Like, if somebody's like the Final Cut King, is it Zach King? Final Cut
Zach
King?
Zach King, yeah.
Zach King. I think he used to be called Final Cut King, didn't he, or something. He's quite open that it's, you know, it's just video editing and he does magic with it.
Yeah.
But if someone's saying that they're not using, if they're proclaiming, I think that the issue for me lies is if someone is like sort of proclaiming that it could be done in the real world.
Yeah.
When it absolutely couldn't. That's where the issue lies for me.
If there is some kind of announcement, some kind of declaration that, you know, there are no stooges, there is no camera tricks involved, this is blah, 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 then yeah, it's no good. There's trust that you lose, isn't there? There's like a weird gut punch that you get and you think, oh man.
I hate it in TV shows with magic when they use CGI or green screen or anything post-production like heavy like that to do the effect, because it's kind of like it makes everything else feel pointless to me.
Yeah.
In a way of it's like, well, you've done it once. You faked it all once. You may as well fake the rest.
Yeah.
Part of the whole beauty of magic and why it's so appealing to so many people is because you are deceiving people, but you're using tricks and methods to deceive them there and then. And that's like the cat and mouse game of it. Whereas if you just skipping the system, skipping the queue, and you're just painting over it in post-production, and the elephant's gone, but really they just, you know, 50-50 screened it. You may as well just watch The Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Just watch something else. Just watch a sci-fi series.
Yeah. I think that I find it most annoying when you watch something and there is some amazing magic in it, and then there is the one shot that the producer or whoever has just forced them to put in.
Yeah.
To heighten what was already a decent effect or trick or whatever. And it just ruins all of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. I can think of one, I won't name it.
Yeah.
You're probably thinking of the same one. I can think of a streaming service TV show with a really well known and liked magician.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the episode and I seen the CGI clip.
Yeah.
Off.
Yeah, same.
Not in like a protest way, but I was like, oh, okay, this is pointless now.
No, and to the people who enjoy it, I hope they really do enjoy it. I hope that doesn't bother me at all. It's not like some kind of stand. It's just, it ruins my enjoyment.
Yeah. Well, it just makes it pointless for me.
Yeah.
I'm there to watch people being experiencing magic under the pretense or under the parameters then of what magic is about, a sleight of hand, trickery, gimmickry, but not it's on the tip of my tongue, but doing it after the fact and just it's just lazy.
Yeah. And it's just don't so unnecessary. All, right? It always seems like it's so unnecessary. It's some stupid 5-second post-production clip that's just added onto it for no reason.
Yeah, I understand that it's like producers that know nothing about magic or directors or even the networks sometimes will want to make like drastic decisions.
Yeah.
But I'd rather cut the entire segment than have that in there.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it all completely worthless.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Because because then you get onto the argument of are inserts okay, where it's being enhanced.
Mm.
You know, like a levitation, for example.
I know the one you're thinking of as well.
Yeah,
the Blaine one back in the day.
Yeah.
Well, I think there is a certain argument to be made for inserts, which is that if the viewer at home was to watch that with the ability to rewind it 3,000 times and in slow motion.
Yeah.
They're going to work it out. Mm-hmm. So we need to give the viewer at home the same experience that the people who are really reacting there and what they see is. I'm much more okay with that.
Yeah.
Than I am with just, green screen the elephant out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even if it was a close-up of the performer's hands when an effect was done.
Yeah,
and it was a bit smoother when they recorded the insert. Then that's fine.
Yeah, or that even more so if it's an insert to give the viewer the perfect shot of the trick, which if the performance that was live had a slight flash in it, so they just re-recorded it so that there was no flash, but the viewer at home didn't get the option to catch the flash. That's, I'm okay with that.
There's the argument to be made that in the participants' memory, that's what it would have looked like anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. There's like a funny thing, loosely touching on it, but sometimes when people will like review a product and they'll say, oh, in the real world, they may hear this or see this. And the fact of the matter is that oftentimes the stuff that stuff in the real world, like a sound, is a non-thing. If it's a quick sound or whatever, actually people don't, they're so focused on whatever the magic is. To them, it's just, it's nothing. No. But if you watched it back on video, it is something. So I do understand those arguments, and I'd be much more on board with that.
It's a very nuanced, it's a nuanced question from Rory.
Yeah, I like the question though, because it makes me think. But for me, anyway, just to draw a conclusion on it, like my own belief is that, at least for the stuff that I post anyway, is that if I can't perform it one-on-one, then I can't post it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great question, man. Thank you so much to all three of our, Tyler, Sam, and Rory. Thank you so much for posting the questions. And thank you to modern music of the Dark Ages as well for giving us permission to use that amazing piece of music our intro song. 100%. And outro song.
And if anyone had any questions that, you know, are along a similar vein, or it's about theory or craft or jamming or anything at all that isn't some kind of big drama, how do they send in the questions?
Yes. So please send in questions. We really want some questions. Audio questions work even better, but we do know some of you are going to be watching this on YouTube. So you can comment down below. But the main place you can find us at the minute is through our email, which is team@theblackartco.com. So team@theblackartco, theblackartco.com. We will be getting a short URL eventually, probably. But team@theblackartco.com, we would really appreciate you sending in your audio messages, questions, or commenting questions down below. You can find us on all major podcast platforms, which is just search for The Black Art Podcast, and you'll see it's hosted by Jake and Lloyd. And I think that brings us to the end of our first episode, Jake.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly natural landing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hopefully stuck the landing quite well.
But it's the first episode. There's always going to be obstacles and glitches. People know. People understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got to say thank you so much.
Thank you, dude.
Honestly, not just for, you know, producing this and, you know, taking the time out of your like busy schedule, but also I genuinely feel this has scratched that itch that I needed for a long time.
Yeah. Whenever we are able to have a video call, which is maybe every couple of weeks or like every 2 months or so, say, or when we have met up at Blackpool and stuff, there's always going to be like an hour or two where we get a little excited putting together an idea.
Mm.
Yeah. And that is just, it's one of the best feelings ever. And I hope people can vicariously take it in.
Dude, this for me is brain food. And I feel like I've been starved of food. I mean, not lately. My cheeks are so chubby at the minute.
But there's an empty pizza box behind you.
I know, just... But yeah, like that whole off-the-cuff jam about that half-card Monty, I don't know, like I keep the phrase, like I'm going to dine out on that all week. Like we'll probably end up chatting about it more throughout the week.
Yeah, 100%.
But here's another thing, guys and girls. If it would be absolutely astonishing if anyone took that effect and performed it.
Oh, yes, please do.
Send us a video. We would play it on this podcast. We will play it. If anybody can go off and take the, yeah, literally send us a performance clip in. Send it to team@theblackartco.com. www.thefeaturedguest.com. 100% we'll play it in the next episode. So if you want to be featured on here, we'll give you a social media shout out, your name and everything, tag you up. We'll play it on here. And maybe I'll try and, I don't know about you, but maybe we could both go off and try and get some sort of performance filmed of it. I got to figure out the logistics of the effect, but I'll try.
Even if we end up having a little play with it and do variants on it each, I'm going to have a go at it, definitely.
Yeah, okay. So homework for next week, as if you haven't got enough already, would be some sort of performance film. I'll try and get one on Kaylee.
Yeah, I'll try and get one.
Okay, this is sick. All right. Well, anyway, tune back in a week from today. And we'll be back at the same time, same place on all streaming services, the Black Art Podcast. I've been Lloyd.
I've been Jake.
I feel like we should say something ominous here.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? What was that quote we had earlier?
Oh, damn it. We really should have prepared something. What was your quote?
I don't know. But if I'm quoting myself, I've already lost.
Yeah. We'll remember it for next time.
Yes. All right, guys. See you next week.
Thank you.